CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Live on a Tuesday, it's the Gareth Cliff Show, CliffCentral.com, and just after 6 o'clock in the morning, bright and early. Well, not, can't say bright, early. Early will work, but no bright. Let's not bullshit ourselves.
It's not
bright. All right, so we have the beautiful and resplendent Lebang Hosana with us this morning, who has, despite the tremendous responsibilities of being quite pregnant at this point, quite pregnant is the way to say it. She's still getting up early and getting shit done, which is tremendous. I mean, really. You know, there's some people who...
My plan...
Some people who have they make up some excuse and they don't even have to worry about some of the responsibilities you have. So, just saying. If you're one of those people...
If you want to...
Yeah, you make it happen.
You will.
You make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. God damn it.
Yeah.
So,
that's it.
So first things first, what's been happening with you and how are you?
I'm feeling good. I'm doing all right. I'm a bit anxious, naturally. But other than that, it's what you're saying. It's just like getting up and going, not letting anything in my stomach that's growing stop me. I'm good, dude. I'm excited for these next few weeks. Just like the jitters are now happening, like it's real. Like the more and more I walk around and people stare at my stomach, I'm like, oh yeah, shit. Gonja, there's a child in there. Like, why are people staring at me? Oh, that's why. But other than that, all is well, man. I'm excited. I'm keen. I'm very keen.
I was thinking of someone who, if you think it's hard to have all the kids you've got, I watched this brilliant movie last night, which, I mean, it's an old classic. It's really magnificently done. Peter O'Toole and what was her name? I can't even remember her name now, and she's the most brilliant, brilliant actress. It's an old movie from like the 1960s about King Henry II of England and Eleanor of Aquitaine. And Eleanor of Aquitaine was the mother of 5 boys and 4 girls. And she was the queen, and she ran her own province of Aquitaine for most of her adult life. She also managed all of these children when they started squabbling with each other. Catherine Hepburn is the actress. That's who the actress was. And wow. I mean, look, so the real person who lived in around the 1100s must have been a phenomenal and formidable woman. And then the character that Catherine Hepburn plays in the movie is just, sometimes you think when people talk about these old movies, you're like, oh, yeah, please. But you're just nostalgic because you're attached to the idea of these old movies being like special because they were recorded back then and they had these great actors and actresses in and the golden era of Hollywood. But I'll tell you something. That is a damn fine movie. Look, it goes on for a long time. And while I was watching it, I was like, got to get to bed at some point. But, man, it was good. And it's called...
How long was it?
2 hours and something. So not terrible, but it's called The Lion in Winter. Just do yourself a favor if you've got some time when your feet are up later on. Just try and watch it. It's a really great movie. And just, you know what I loved, Lebang, is the dialogue is so beautifully written.
Mm-hmm.
Like these days, you watch a Marvel movie or whatever. You know, the dialogue's stupid. There are a couple of jokes here and there, but it's not clever. It's not... When you listen to the kind of dialogue that was written, and I believe that The Lion in Winter used to be a play, which was actually put on. It was almost like a semi-Shakespearean type play. So when you listen to the way that these two characters, especially the two main, you know, Henry II and Eleanor of Aquitaine, Peter O'Toole and Catherine Hepburn, and you hear the way they talk to each other, and you hear how clever each line is. Each line is just beautifully done. I mean, whether they're being horrible to each other or they're remembering when they were in love and they're talking about their own children. I mean, it's just beautifully, beautifully written. And I don't know that a lot of movies these days are that focused on the dialogue. I think a lot of them are focused on the action. A lot of them are focused on special effects and kind of making a big noise and whatever. But and I don't want to sound like one of those old boring people who watches art movies or movies from the, you know, before they were born. But honestly, you compare them side by side, it's just not even a contest. It's like I watched it and I was blown away by how very brilliant the acting and the dialogue was. I was like, I didn't think this stuff would impress me.
Yeah, it would definitely impress you. You do seem like the type that would resonate more towards those kinds of movies than anything more recent. But definitely I agree with you in that they were more...
You're saying I'm old?
...intentional. No, what? Did I say that? They were just more intentional with their dialogue back then, because wasn't that what sold? It was the script. Yeah. It was the storytelling. That's what we bought into.
Right.
Now it's like there's so much smoke and mirrors. There's like... just like glitter everywhere. They don't even need to say anything. Need to say anything that makes sense. Well, as long as it looks good, which is sad because, you know, we've ultimately lost out on like a whole freaking time of really, really, really good movies. And that's why they're classics.
Well,
and these days it's hard to get classics.
Maybe you're right. But I also think that's one of those things that screws up my general view of everything. You know, my general view is that everything's improving. Like, if I look at the state of humanity now and I think about what we know and where we've been and the internet and, you know, the kind of stuff that we can find out about each other, and we've got brilliant people who can now who are accessible to all of us. Even if you're not at Harvard University, you can listen to a podcast with the greatest professor in, I don't know, whatever the subject is, at the greatest university in the world, and you don't have to be a gazillionaire who is enrolled at the university. You know, that's the kind of access none of us had before. But the problem is, this thing that you just said goes against my general trajectory of upwardness.
Yeah, but Gareth, with upwardness also invites a lot of shortcuts. So you get a whole bunch of people that
can
see the goal, and it's like, oh, I can just get there quicker now because the internet, I just need to watch YouTube for an hour, and now I'm a movie director. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas there's still those people that put their elbows in the grease, you know, they put in their 10,000 years these days and really like these good movies. But for the most part, just focus on the good stuff because it's still out there. There's really, really good stuff that you can still consume.
Well, I mean, there are lots of people here suggesting all kinds of movies. By the way, yesterday I made a real mistake. I right-clicked on, I think it was Sanele who listens to us every morning, and I think I blocked Sanele without even knowing what I was doing. It was while there was a conversation going on. No, I feel terrible about this. That's why I'm bringing it up. It's like it bothered me all day yesterday. Ooh, can I tell you what I did yesterday?
Go for it.
I went to my old school. This is an amazing thing. So there's this guy at the school. I'd never met him before. He's in matric at the moment. He's one of the prefects, leadership as they call them. A guy called Mihlali. And Mihlali sent me an email. You know, I get emails all the time from people. And I respond to all of them, like I've said before, even if it takes me a little while, I get to every email. And Mihlali basically said, hey, listen, would you come to the school and just like address the whole school? We're going to an assembly or whatever. And it's part of his matric project of like trying to, I don't know whether it's inspire or motivate or kind of open up like everybody at the school's ideas of what you could end up doing one day. And, you know, having done some media stuff and all the rest of it, they all kind of knew my name, which, you know, is always a relief because, as someone said to me a while ago, you don't know you're relevant until, like, school kids know your name. And you also don't know you're irrelevant when school kids forget your name because they've got a lot of things that they could rather pay attention to. And so I arrived there yesterday, which was so weird, Lebang. I don't know when last you went back to your old school. And I'm not one of those people who wants to go back to school just because I don't want to relive like nostalgia and glory days and all that shit, like in the song by Bruce Springsteen. So when most of my friends who I knew from school that I really liked, I'm still friends with, and it's a handful. It's like maybe five or six, right?
Yeah.
The rest, you know, you were at school with them, so it doesn't mean you need to be with them forever. And I got there and it was so weird because there was so much about the school that was so familiar. But a lot has changed.
Okay.
A lot has changed.
I was about to say, I'm sure there's been changes,
Because it's, again, like you said earlier, I'm so old, right?
Hey. I think, look, it's nice to be able to go back to your old school, especially if you get invited. like, hey, please come back for ABC. That's always nice because you feel like you may have left some sort of impact.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're setting an example for the other kids. But if you're just one of those people that just happens to want to keep going back and like visit every year.
Sad. That's so sad.
That's a little bit creepy. You know, that's like, you know, get a lifey type of energy. But it must have been really nice to see those kids, though.
Well, I mean, the school, you know, first of all, you forget when you're at school that everything looks bigger because you're littler. And
yeah,
you know, the kinds of things that impress you when you're at school are not the kinds of things that impress you when you go back. I mean, I just wanted to go into one or two of the old classrooms and just see what it felt like again. And to because I remember being in those science labs and just loving, you know, the chemical experiments that we were doing. And I loved being in certain of the classrooms because the teachers would just make it so interesting to be in there. You'd learn about countries far away or whatever it was. And I mean, I was always a curious kid, so it wasn't difficult to stimulate me. But I looked at all of these kids and first of all, I mean, the school's improved in leaps and bounds, and it was nice to see so much development going on. And it's nice to see like a school that's full, like there's 1,300 kids and there are a lot of really, really positive things that are going on there, which is fantastic, because if you leave something and it turns out worse than when you left it, you always think, yeah, oh no, that's a bit sad. But it's exactly the opposite. I mean, I see more and more going on there. They've built this pool, and they've got a whole area there. They've got more facilities. You can see, and I mean, it's just looking terrific. And there were none but two of the teachers who were there when I was there. So I joked because there's an old age home that they built down below the school. So I'm like, in front of all these kids, I'm like, hi. Last time I was here, Nelson Mandela was president. And I'm sorry, all the teachers that I had are now in the old age home, which is just down there. So
that's a great icebreaker.
So if you don't know who I am, that's absolutely fine. But but I was here a long, long time ago, you know. And I also remember when we were at school, hey, Bakabantu, he's here. He was running. Are you feeling better, dude?
Hey. So I have a new bout of flu. It's different, God. Presents with different symptoms. But I'm alive. But yeah, this one is better. Because last week I was suffering.
Suffering.
I don't want to be... I don't want to join you guys and your guys complaining about old movies and back in my day.
Shut up, man. I don't want that. Yeah, shut up. We're teaching you. Shut up and listen. This is why...
Well, you called Gareth old, Labang.
Yeah.
And I did not.
You see, Labang, you've just been roped in. How's that? Ha! You just got roped in.
Look, if you matriculate in 1925, it's okay. This is a safe space. It's okay. We accept you here. There's no age limit. There's no cap. It's what's inside that matters, Gareth.
What's inside. All bones that are grinding against each other. Like,
I must tell you, it was really cool to go back there and just see like the stuff that you know, the places where you would sit with your friends at break and like that sort of shit. It's nice. It's a good feeling. Yeah. And I'm not hurrying back there anytime. There's got to be a reason. And I love the fact that it was just one of the, you know, one of the students there who invited me because I wouldn't have invited myself. And it was cool to do. I did finish it off by saying, you guys probably care about what the people on the left and right of you think. So I said to them, and it's this thing that we spoke about on the show the other day. I said, like, yeah, until you're middle 20s, you will care a lot about what other people think. So then your middle 30s, you will stop caring what people think. By the time you get to your 40s, you'll realize no one was thinking about you anyway. So they like that.
Anyway. That's dope.
Yeah, so that's really cool. Bakabantu, what's been happening with you besides being sick and pathetic like an old man? See, we can throw these. We can cast these. You want to start this game? We can play this game. You're the one who was sickly. Lebang.
Okay.
Lebang has got a whole person growing inside of her, and she hasn't.
A whole fifth person.
She hasn't been slacking off. I've been sick. I haven't missed one show, so I don't know what your story is. You big pussy.
Hey, guys, they don't make them how they used to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I'm not from the school where you guys used to go out and hunt Was that you or Labang, Gareth?
No, we used to hunt for our food. Yeah, we had to hunt for our food. Congo Chris says, Gareth,
break.
Gareth is so old that his report card was graded in Greek letters. Oh, that's so great. I love it.
Are you feeling better, though?
I have a new bout of a different flu for some reason. I don't know where I got it from. I think I got it from work because everyone's just been sick at work. I don't know because I just went back Friday at work and then I got sick over by Sunday. I was sick again. I'm like, guys, this can't be me alive. This can't be it. But last week when I got better on Thursday, I started having this headache. But then I went to the doctor. The doctor said it was tied to my hypertension. So I was like, oh, okay. So that's a different sickness that you have on Thursday.
You have hypertension?
So basically I've had three sicknesses. Yeah, I have hypertension, Gareth.
You got a lot of you got a lot of problems. I don't know if you're going to make it to your 40s.
I've got a lot of old people problems.
I don't know if you're going to make it all the way to your 40s. One day when we're having this conversation at your age, Lebang and I will still be here, but you might be dead.
Yeah.
Unless Elon Musk figures out a way to upload our consciousness into computers.
Well,
then I'll be alive.
Which he might.
Yeah, we're still waiting for that. By the way, do you hear his his Twitter deal might be off. We'll get to that later, though.
Yeah, I heard that. But I was going to say, speaking about movies that are new but really good and it's based on a play.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Hamilton?
As in the Hamilton music? No, the Hamilton musical about Alexander Hamilton that was famously written by this, what's his name?
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Apparently it is fantastic. I haven't seen it. Everybody tells me it's brilliant, but yeah.
It is. It is 3 hours of just brilliance. It is like I've watched The Batman. And because I'm a man of many talents and I am not like Gareth who hates on superheroes and hates everything good in life.
I've watched those movies. I've watched those movies. I just don't rate them as being great works of art that in 100 years time people go, ooh, well done humanity. That was a high point.
But Hamilton is a modern day Shakespeare, from reading Othello back in high school and Macbeth and Romeo and Juliet and all the stuff we did in high school and watching Hamilton. I'm this guy is brilliant. And he finds a way to merge it with rap, Lebang. So it's not like a musical. Mm. I am Alexander Hamilton. It's it's very modern. It's very modern. It's a great take on what a musical and what a Shakespearean musical is.
You had me at rap. Okay, but 3 hours is also quite a commitment. Never getting back. If I'm going to commit to this, it really has to be the build-up needs to be correct and I need to know what I'm getting myself into. It's not just a 1 hour. It's a 3 hour film. So,
Lebang, you watched Fast and the Furious, all of them. That's 2 hours a pop. You're never getting that time back.
That's action back to back. And remember that F is for family, my boy. F is for family. So.
I can't get, if I look at a series, I did waste my time. I mentioned this series 2 weeks ago, I think. I said I was watching this thing called The Pentaverate with Mike Myers. So I watched I watched the whole thing. What a waste of time. Now I really persevered, hey? I gave it all. I was like, I'm gonna watch this. I'm not gonna give up. I've started the series. I'm already 3 in, so there's sunken cost creeping in. And then by the 4th episode I'm like, oh Jesus, I hope this ends soon. Luckily it did. I think it's only 6 or 7 episodes long, but I had to watch to the end now because I was like, maybe there's something brilliant at the end of this. I looked at this and I thought, no wonder Netflix are losing money.
I caught your guys' review on that. I was like, Gareth and Lebang say it's meh, episode one. I'm like, nah, I'm good. Because you guys were talking about it last week. I don't think I'll watch it.
But this is to Lebang's point. We're trying to save people time. If I see something great, even if it's a movie from the 60s that I never watched before, I'll tell you to watch it. If it's bullshit like The Pentaverate, don't watch it. So,
yeah, and you have every right to believe us. We don't like to lead you astray. Mm-mm. That's not why we do this. We care about you. We don't want you to watch shit and waste time. That Pentaveran thing, it was so
horrible.
I didn't even get that far, Gareth. I think I saw the first two.
Horrible.
I was like, I don't want to hate you, Mike Myers. I like you so much. You had such a great time. You know, yep. Your gold member days was so good. Let me not continue watching this. Otherwise, my vision of you is just going to be poor.
Yeah, we see we respect the fact that people listen to us for an hour or two every morning, and we're not going to make you waste an hour or two on some shitty series that you're going to go, ugh. Like, I think about it. The point with a show like ours is it's never perfect because you don't know what's going to happen. We don't script things. It could change direction. We might have a great guest. We might have a strange guest. We might have some people who are terrible. We might have conversations that are tremendous and interesting and terrific. Hopefully that's what happens. But sometimes, you know, we have a day where maybe Lebung and Bakabantu and I are not on our best form, and then, you know, we maybe don't deliver a 10 out of 10. But the point is with like a show like this Mike Myers Pentaveret thing, you kind of feel like someone's spent a lot of money on every episode, and there's, you know, makeup and special effects, and like there's a storyline and they've perfected it, and there's been a bunch of people who've been polishing this thing to make it better. And then you watch it and you're like, it's almost as if no effort went into this thing. It's just dumb. It's just really dumb.
And we've got high expectations at the end of the day. I mean, number one, you're Mike Myers. If a studio has bought into your idea, it means somebody okayed this.
Yes.
Somebody upstairs said, this is great. Put a whatever budget behind it. So at the least of our expectations is that it'll be viewable, consumable, entertaining.
Speaking of brilliant and consumable and entertaining, just watch this. This is a brilliant clip that was on the SABC just a couple of days ago about some kind of crisis in Kimberley. And I think this is somebody from the mayoral committee, or it could even be the mayor. I don't know who this person is, but you're going to love this. All right. Are you ready for this? Is the best entertainment in television at the moment. If you're watching live TV, you are going to be sad you didn't see this live, but luckily for you, we have it here for you. Ready? Go.
Also, what should residents do in the meantime?
We are urging on residents to we working on what was the question again?
What should residents do in the meantime?
We are working on mobile.
Now, I'm so glad you brought up this video, Gareth, because I'm at the point in my life where I actually don't find these videos very funny.
Oh, come on, Levi.
And also, I swear to God, I've seen so many of these videos where people are being interviewed in the streets, and generally, you know, we end up making like this huge mockery of the fact that they can't speak English. How are they supposed to speak English? It's not their first language.
No,
really, as the interviewer.
I don't buy that shit. Look,
I'm so over it.
You're trying to make. Gareth, can I take this one?
Yeah, Bakabantu, you take this one. I kind of think that you've got an answer prepared for this, but Lebung is being extremely sympathetic to someone who deserves no sympathy. Go for it, Bakabantu.
No, I get the whole, it's not your mother tongue, Lebung, but like, she could have spoken her mother tongue. Number one, it's SABC. She could have spoken mother tongue. SABC would have forked out for a translator or something.
Yeah.
And then number two, she's an executive of something, because she has some kind of authority to address this water crisis thing. So her position deems her to be prepared at least. Because she looks like a great.
They didn't pluck her out of
the oral.
They didn't pluck her out of the great hold of Kimberley and say to her, "All right, now we're going to put you on TV and make you talk in a language that isn't your own and explain something in general." She is in charge of the water crisis. She is a spokesperson who has been asked, because she can speak to people, about what's going on in Kimberley. That is the best response Kimberley can offer. Now,
From my experience in media and reporting, it's usually the interviewer's job or role to see that, you know what best answers am I going to get out of this person? If this person's already struggling with your pre-prep, like, yo, dude, are you ready? We're going to go live. If this person's already like, ask the question in their mother tongue, they'll be so much more comfortable. But what I'm saying is, guys, how many videos do we see every week of people being interviewed in the streets, and they all suck at English. And we just sit there and kind of like laugh at it. I'm just over it. It's
Lebang, lame. Lebang, it's not even at English. This woman's brain didn't work properly. She didn't even hear the question. She had to ask for the question to be said again. So it's not a, this is not like she didn't understand. She was, she's so useless. The software and the hardware are so damaged in the head. It's got nothing to do with language. That is not a language thing. I reckon she would have been as shit in Setswana, if that's what she's speaking, because she's in Kimberley. I'm telling you.
The problem is, Levan, she's tripping over her lies. She's not prepared. She doesn't even know, because probably she has water, because she's some kind of politician.
Of course she is.
That's the problem. So, like, in that one video.
How did she get into that position of power, right? Who hired her?
Exactly.
Because she is not capable.
And who thought that putting her, like, okay, so here's the problem. It's not the SABC looking to embarrass this woman. In fact, the journalist in this question asks the same question twice, which you don't normally get
with
a chance to do on TV. So no one said to her, now we're going to embarrass you. She was chosen as the representative of that mayoral committee or whatever. They put her on TV. They're like, she'll handle it, because they know she's useless, but she's obviously got like some reason that she was put in that position. Maybe she knows somebody or something. And then when she embarrasses herself, people like you are going to say, oh, shame, it's because of English. It's not. Make excuses.
It's not our shame. Just why is this funny? Is this really entertainment? In a country like South Africa, this is what we're going to say.
You know what?
Wow. Yes. This is so funny. No.
Because
it's not funny.
Well, there are people who have no water in Kimberley. And it's because of people like her and the people who put her in that position, and the fact that she has no good excuse. You could see there's no idea going through her mind that she can explain this away, but she's got such a huge amount of hubris that she reckons, I'll just go in front of the camera. I don't have to prepare.
I'll just wing it.
And that's what she's done. So what it shows is not that there's some kind of mother tongue thing. I mean, that was a great excuse and remains a good excuse for people who honestly have language difficulties. But you can, as Bagabantu says, answer in any language on the SABC. They can ask you a question in English, and you can say to them then, in whatever language you prefer to speak, sorry, say that again in my language. If you take them seriously, this woman doesn't take her job seriously. She doesn't take the question seriously. She doesn't even care about the problem in Kimberley. And you could see that from there. And I don't like this whole thing that we make excuses for people like that, because that's precisely why we have no water there.
I agree with you guys in that she obviously is not qualified for the position that she's in. I am just tired of seeing videos like this that are made a mockery of in the country that we live in, considering. But let's isolate this one video. Yes, we all agree she's trash, and she's showing that she's trash. But she's also showing a bigger problem that we're dealing with, is that how do half of the people get in the positions that they get into? It's right. The same bloody nonsense that we see all the time. And that's really what we should be discussing. Nothing more. It shouldn't be, you know, a case of, like that part I think is just fluff. The real issue here is, how the hell did this nonsense person get here? That's it. That should be the only thing.
EP 47 says, you're calling her trash. It was a watered.
Aren't you?
It was a watered.
This is funny.
It was a watered down response. Look, I don't feel sorry for anyone who's put in front of a camera because they're in a position of power and authority and is asked to explain themselves and can't. To me, that is the whole reason we have journalism, is to out these people so that now, hopefully, someone in Kimberley goes to her office, knocks on the door there and says, sorry, Matt, you know what? That thing you did on TV was fucking embarrassing, and we're going to have to get rid of you because you really, really shit at your job. That's what it requires. That's the only reason we put her on TV, is because hopefully in replacing her, we find someone who sounds like they actually give a damn about the people of Kimberley who they've been elected to do something for. And number two, who can answer a simple question, especially when it's asked twice.
Yeah, that we agree, Yebo.
So, you know what? The only reason we end up with people like that is because we're making excuses for them.
Yeah, true that.
So,
testify.
I think are we saying here that Lebang is part of the problem?
Yes. Yes.
No. That's not what we're saying.
9 months pregnant Lebang is part of the problem.
Don't. That's no excuse. She's not going to say she's a powerful black woman. Hold on. She's not using that excuse, so you're not allowed to. And by the way,
also this term strong powerful black woman we'll talk about another day. I've also got a problem with that, but let's park that.
Well,
it's what Garrett said. Now we're all going to have different opinions on this show, and that's what makes the show interesting.
Yeah.
Imagine how lame it would be if we all sat here and said, "Oh yes, ha ha ha, you're all so right. We all agree." Mm. No,
of course,
no. We're supposed to have these conversations, so I'm glad you brought that up. But
and
contextually, like if you just see the range of these videos that pop up every other day, literally, it's just a joke. You know, it's just a joke, and this one isn't.
Look at how often this happens. Prove just to push the point one last time, and then I'll leave it alone because I really did play that just for entertainment's sake. But we've gone in this direction.
I know you did.
Okay, so when you watch that idiot Joe Biden on TV and you see how he stumbles and trips over every second word. I mean, he doesn't even make an effort to say the words properly anymore. He just you can see his brain is completely melted in his head.
Mush.
There's just nothing going on there except like all he can think about is I need to pee and pudding and maybe occasionally like where the hell am I? You know, you can see he's like he should be in an old age home in frail care.
Playing bingo
or just having a nap.
Gareth,
having a nap.
On a point on Joe Biden, I don't think English is his mother tongue.
Well, that's my point. So he's doing the same thing. I mean, they asked him about this. There are a couple of things going on at the moment. The biggest issue in America at the moment and the thing that will lose the Democrats the elections at the end of this year when it comes to the House and the Senate is inflation. And this guy is just... He got up on stage over the weekend, I think it was. I watched this clip. Let's see if I can't find it for you. This old man. Remember, Joe is like, what, he's 78, 79 years old? And he gets up on stage and he starts shouting at people. He's like, and there's like a crowd of, I don't know, 20, 30 people. It's still the biggest crowd he's had since... You know, he was campaigning against Trump and mostly staying in his basement. And I mean, listen, the whole point of Joe Biden was just don't be Donald Trump and people will vote for you. That's all. The standard is so low. People hate Donald Trump so much. All you have to do is just not be him and you'll get the votes. That's all he had to do. But he gets up there and it's like, you know, those old men who scream at kids out of their window when the kids are on the lawn in the front of their house.
Get off my property.
And he's shitting on the American people for inflation that he is partly responsible for. When he took office, there was every reason for the economy to come back and boom. COVID was on its way down. He was assuring us that he had that under control. And all he had to do was not create economic policy that would hold things back or retard things even further. Open it up, let things get back to where they were pre-COVID because it was already booming then. Instead, now there's inflation, the worst inflation in living American history. I think even during the Carter administration, they didn't hit numbers like this. His approval ratings, even with Democrats, are in the like low 40s, high 30s. He's probably the most unpopular president of any of our lifetimes. And then he gets on TV or he gets in front of a crowd and he starts shouting at them. It's the same thing as that woman from Kimberley. They're just out of their depth. They don't know where to be. They don't know what to do. And people have got to throw them the hell out of office because they're holding things back and they're ruining people's lives. I mean, this inflation thing is hitting. It's not going to hurt the rich people. It never does. The rich people are just doing what the rich people do. The middle class and the working class people in America are being hit hard by this stuff. And then there's this old dude shouting at them like they need that, you know? Again, same situation, two different people. One woman in Kimberley who couldn't string a sentence together because she couldn't care less, and one very, very senile old man in America. Same problem. That's what I'm thinking. Anyway, we've got to get to some other things, including some headlines. So let's take a look. There's a story, which I must be honest with you, I didn't know about until I saw it in the headlines this morning. And maybe, you know, maybe again, I'm ignorant here, but I didn't know about this Elton Yankees thing on the flight. Did you guys know about this?
I found this out Monday.
So apparently, Elton Yankees, the Springbok fly half, was arrested at OR Tambo on the 15th of May, which is what, 2 days ago. And apparently there was an incident on board a flight. So his agent revealed he was traveling back from Turkey without his family and that a light was damaged on board the flight. However, Adams suggested that they felt the incident has been unnecessarily heightened. In a report compiled by News 24, the report alleges that Yankee spent 10 minutes banging on the toilet door of an Emirates Airlines flight until his fists bled. A fellow passenger alleges that Yankees could be heard saying, "Come on, my scat," to an air hostess who was hiding in the cubicle. Two witnesses told News 24 that Elton Yankees was unsteady on his feet, that there was blood all over the toilet door, while suggesting his blood-stained fists also smeared some of the seats. A visibly terrified air hostess was said to have emerged from the toilet after he finally returned. The eyewitnesses suggested the incident occurred after he came to economy class from his place in business class. So here's what some people have said. He was banging on the toilet door in Afrikaans. It was clear that he wanted to speak to someone in the bathroom, and he ended up punching the door of the bathroom. That caused his knuckles to start bleeding. He came back to business class. The blood of his knuckles was all over the toilet door, and he was moving through the cabin, smearing blood on people's seats because he was walking clumsily. So it sounded like he was drunk. It sounds like he was...
Something.
Yeah, it sounds like he was after this air hostess, you know, trying to join the Mile High Club. And this is a very embarrassing situation. So they've put out a press release, and his agent has said, "We believe it's been unnecessarily heightened. Our client remains compliant with the investigation, and we would like to allow the legal authorities to attend to this without any undue influence. Ask that the public and press respect the legal process." In closing, I confirm
That's proven to work.
Well, in closing, I can confirm that Mr. Yankees has been released and is not in police custody. No further comments issued at this stage. So that's from the his agent. But this is not the greatest thing to do if you don't want, what do they call it, unnecessarily heightened situations. It's like behave really stupidly on a plane where there are other passengers who can see and will report their own version of the story. It sounds very bad.
I don't think it has been heightened. The only thing that's heightened right in the story is the airplane, because I'm hearing about this for the first time, and they haven't really been making a lot of noise about this. This is literally just like
first
they're kind of sweeping it under the radar. Because by now, if he got arrested on the 15th, it's 2 days later. And you know how the social media cycle is. It's like a 7-day thing. So by now, if you haven't heard about it, then it's probably not going to be in the news tomorrow or the day, unless there's new developments. But I guess he's got a good PR team, because this is the first I'm hearing of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything you want to add to that, Bagabantu? Move on.
No, I was going to say, in fact, like to Lavang's point, the only people heightening the situation is the agent addressing this, because the story is how the agent addressed it, not what Elton did. But yeah, no, what he did is deplorable. You can't do that. Yeah, no. We don't know why
don't
he did what he did.
Guys. But drinking on airplanes is dangerous.
Yeah, like, and also, it's a try confined not to, space, whatever he wanted.
Try not to harass the...
With that girl.
Try not to harass the cabin crew.
It's a confined space. Yeah, it's a confined space. You can't run away, and you're basically trapped, and you're being a terrorist on the plane. Nah, dude, don't.
Oof, you can't say the word terrorist and plane in the same sentence. Come on.
Well, it's kind of what it is, you know, whether we like it or not. So, okay, here's a story that nobody wants to hear this morning. And I'm reticent to even tell you this story, because I know we're all dealing with a lot of things at the moment. But apparently, motorists in June have to get ready to usher in another petrol price hike of what they're calling horrific proportions. So,
oh my God.
Listen to this. Apparently, there is there is a huge amount of stuff going on. First of all, we've got an automatic increase of R1.50 a litre in the general fuel levy. Bullish dollar, floundering rand, surging international crude oil prices. We could have to pay an extra R3.50 a litre come month end, according to the AA. That's a lot of money, man.
They hate us. They actually hate us. I'm convinced.
They hate us, right? What do you say to that? That's a lot. If it goes up by R3.50 a litre, forget about it. Nobody's going to go home. No one's going to go to work. No one. You're just going to sit in one place. Yeah, I feel terribly sorry for people who are already being pinched. I mean, listen, transport costs are crazy for the average South African, especially people who have to catch taxis. especially people who have to catch buses. Those people don't have an option. The increases get passed straight onto them. So it's not as if these increases, you know, are absorbed by government, by the Department of Transport, by the taxi buses, by the taxi drivers. And ordinary people who have their own cars, whether you're lucky enough to have that or not, or a bike or whatever it is that you got, you're going to be paying through the nose too. And guess what? When the petrol price goes up, everything goes up because the cost of getting the stuff to you goes up. So expect every little thing on the shelves to go up commensurately. This is a scary thing, and I suppose we just got to deal with it because there's nothing they can do. There's nothing they will do. You have to that's it.
Just have to swallow that hard pill, man.
Yeah, not great. And then Russia, shame. Russia, apparently McDonald's are going to leave Russia for good after 30 years. Poor Russia. This could give them a chance to get even healthier. I know. I mean, if only McDonald's would leave here, then we'd all get healthier.
Cyril would never allow that.
Well, he does. Nope. I don't think he owns them anymore. He used to. But so the whole thing here is we meant to be saying, oh, good for McDonald's. They've taken a stand and they're getting out of Russia. Because, as they said, the humanitarian crisis and the unpredictable operating environment that's been caused by the Ukraine war is forcing them to shut down their stores. The first McDonald's opened in Moscow in 1990. And a year later, the Soviet Union collapsed. See how bad McDonald's is for you? Everything falls down.
The Soviet Union collapsed because of McDonald's. There's a direct correlation.
It's a fun story to tell. So apparently McDonald's wants us to think that them pulling out of Russia is some kind of moral high ground situation for them. I don't know if I see it that way. I see it as like advantage Russia because maybe people will eat healthier food. That's what I'm thinking. You think that's fair?
I don't know these brands who are pulling out of Russia if they are making an impact. I don't think McDonald's is going to stop a war. I don't think Vladimir Putin is going to be like, oh, I can't get my Big Mac today. So
yeah.
I guess the war over.
Better stop. Yeah,
I think it's just, they just want the easy publicity of, oh, McDonald's is good for the world. It's not good for the world. It kills people. Proven fact, America. But anyway, it's just, what is it? Virtue signaling. That's what it is. It's virtue signaling by McDonald's.
Congo Chris is on fire this morning. Da 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 da. I'm loving Niet. Niet. Niet being no in Russia. Very good. Got some smart people on the go this morning. Speaking of smart people, it's time for us to turn our attention to the great Jean-Jacques Cornish, who waits for us in the green room of our studio this morning to tell us about Africanalysis, which, of course, is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, where we look at what is happening around the continent. We've got a bunch of things to talk to Jean-Jacques Cornish about. JJ, how are you?
I'm immensely well, thank you. Very, very well. I was just going to have my McDonald's breakfast, and I was planning my, the much-demanded personal appearance with you guys, but do you mind if I do it before the end of the month so that I don't think I have another crossing before the end of the month?
So you can afford
maybe I'll delay it till the fuel price goes down.
I know. Right? Isn't it terrible? I mean, these are the things that ordinary old people have to deal with, all of us. We are ordinary old people because we're all just trying to get by and do our thing every day. And you know, because Russia and Ukraine want to fight with each other, I don't see why this should be, or Joe Biden for that matter, why all of this should be affecting us as much as it is. But JJ, let's turn our attention to the continent that is home and bring our eyes to places that are closer to home and look at some of the stories there, because this is what we love talking to you about. And Bakabantu and Lebang and I, every week or every second week, we like to check in with you and see what's going on. What's happening in Somalia? We haven't checked in on Somalia for a long time. Well, that place has been a basket case for all of my living memory, but is it getting better?
1991, the fall of Siad Barre. They've had conflict there ever since. And just for fun, right now they have the worst drought in 40 years.
Man. Never rains.
They have a new president. They had elections. Now, you want to know about elections? One person, one vote. They haven't had that since 1991. This is what they do with their elections. They have MPs. The MPs are elected thus by the various clans.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Somalia is split by clans. So each clan puts up a number of delegates, and they then elect MPs. They have not that many MPs, and they then each become part of an electoral college. And so Hassan Sheikh Mohammed, who was president 5 years ago, won the election after three rounds with 214 votes, becomes president of this electoral college votes. He beats Farmajo, who's Mohammed Abdullahi, who got 110 votes.
Sure.
He will serve a four-year term. The voting was done at a specially secured aircraft hangar outside of the capital, Mogadishu. So, as I say, people saying, how can you call this a proper election? This is the closest thing they can do for an election. There's huge celebrations, people firing shots into the air,
oh, wow.
People banging drums, and then there was congratulations from neighboring Kenya, from Ethiopia. They're all happy that this is over now. The election was delayed for 15 months. Farmajo hanging on. But the important thing because he's now going to face this conflict and the drought, not a job that I would want, Hassan Sheikh Mohammed.
No.
But the important thing is that Joe Biden has approved the return of some U.S. troops to Somalia. You know, Bill Clinton pulled them out with after Black Hawk Down. Remember that notorious episode? Yes. But there were 700 troops there. Now, they were using drones, effectively, and training Somali troops. Donald Trump pulled them out. Now Joe Biden is saying we will put troops back in. That was the overnight news. We don't know the number yet. Will it be another 700? But essentially, they have targeted the five of the top al-Shabaab leaders, and they will get them not with boots on the ground chasing them into settlements, but with drones. And they were quite effective with us in the past. Even the Somali authorities having to say, well, okay, they're doing the job for them. The fact is there's also been quite a lot of collateral damage.
Yeah.
When you use drones, that's bound to happen, and you get civilians killed.
But things
are hotting up.
You know, we talk about Somalia, and I always kind of think of that Lord of the Rings movie where there's that city that's been almost completely obliterated. There's more rubble than there is, you know, brick standing on brick or stone standing on stone. And really, Mogadishu is an absolute mess and has been since 1991. That's longer than South Africa's been a democracy, that place has been a mess. What is it like to be? Have you been in Mogadishu? And what is it like for the ordinary Somalian when you've got this play acting by politicians and they're meeting in an aircraft hangar to elect a government, in inverted commas? But it's really just warlords and, as you say, clans. It doesn't seem to me that the average Somalian is even particularly affected by any of this play acting by the politicians. What is life like for the ordinary Somalian?
Well, Al-Shabaab is being kicked out of the urban areas. There's 15 million Somalians, by the way. And, you know, the politicians then meet at hotels and restaurants and places within Somalia. This is the first election. It's only the third election since 91 that has been held in Somalia itself. Not only are they questionably democratic, but they were held in Kenya and in Djibouti. And there's a lot of vote buying. The Djiboutian president, Omar Guelleh, said, I don't know about this election when he hosted it last time.
Right.
It seems that Al-Shabaab is buying all the necessary votes to run the place. But, you know, cross Mogadishu, you have to go through something like seven checkpoints. So the center is held by one clan. Another section is held by another warlord. It's an absolute nightmare to traverse the place. Somalians trying to get on with their lives. But every time something happens that is heartening, along come the Al-Shabaab and blow it up. You know, they don't want anything to happen that's of any use. So it literally is. When you talk about a failed state, that means one thing. But Somalia is really, really a nightmare state.
Yeah, I remember there's that report that they bring out. I think it's the UN or it could be some NGO in the world who actually ranks countries from best to worst. And you know, at the bottom, they've got the failed states and they've got some countries which are absolutely war-torn and where there is a current war, places like the Ukraine or, you know, Afghanistan or wherever. And for some reason, poor old Somalia always ends up right at the bottom of that list. In other words, they say it's worse than active war zones because there's just been nothing but misery for the people of Mogadishu and the surrounding areas, obviously, where it's probably even...
And sadly, South Sudan makes that area too. You know, they countries that have been absolutely riven by conflict. I think that is a UN that is a UN thing, peace survey.
Yeah.
That's an American body. Sorry, an American body that has it. I'm busy working with it. You know, I'm trying to put the finishing touches to my book and trying to work out the five worst and the five best in that sense. Those two always come. You always have countries like Finland and Norway at the top. I don't know how long they'll be that way once they've joined NATO. I suppose even better. Unless the Russians do what they threaten. But no, I love to see lists like that, corruption lists and so on. Mm. Because I always check the top three and the bottom three.
Yeah.
And sad to see that, you know, the African countries, you're always getting one of them at least or two in the bottom three.
It's called the Fund for Peace. That's what they are, the FFP. And they publish an annual report called the Failed States Index. And that's where I'm getting this information. So if you want to know, that's what it is.
Okay.
The Fund for Peace. Anyway, we've got other stories that we need to talk about with you this morning. Let's just turn our attention. You mentioned Kenya congratulating the Somalians. What's happening with old Raila Odinga? And Uhuru Kenyatta.
Well, do you remember in 2017, they actually took up cudgels against each other in after those elections? Well, there was the famous handshake a year later. Uhuru Kenyatta, his terms have run out, so he's leaving. The elections are in August, and he has endorsed Raila Odinga. So he's Kenyatta's Jubilee Party aligned now with Azimio Ayo Moja, which means Quest for Unity, the coalition of Raila Odinga. Yep. Now, Uhuru Kenyatta's former deputy, William Ruto, he's wanted, you know, for the fighting against Odinga. He's still wanted by the International Criminal Court. He's now been sacked because he's talking about corruption between the two big powers. It's all become an issue of tribe, you know. Ruto is Luo, Kenyatta is obviously Kalenjin is Ruto, and the Kikuyu, you know. So there is that fight, the tribal fight, but the former rivals have joined forces. But what Raila Odinga has done is choose the ex-justice minister Martha Karua as his running mate. It's the first time a woman has become a presidential running mate, so the likely deputy president. And she made a speech yesterday. I was watching on Cloud, saying that I'm not going to let you down. Congratulations, great choice, all the things that you'd expect incumbent or a putative foreign deputy president to say. But these former rivals have now joined forces, and so it's going to make for a very, very interesting election in Kenya. They've had their share of instability, but, you know, could Kenya become one of the big powers in Africa if they can restore stability? I've no doubt it could become, but it isn't there yet.
So, all right, it doesn't sound like there's a huge amount of stability going on there either, for what it's worth. And obviously, the east of Africa is a complicated place. But let's just turn our attention to the west for a second. And Mali, which is another place which has also had a very tough time over the last few years. I mean, we know that Algeria, Mali, even Morocco, Libya most certainly, that whole part of the west of Africa has been complicated, to say the least. What's happening in Mali at the moment?
Well, just below the very North African countries, the Mediterranean board countries, is this area called the Sahel. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely torn by jihadi fighting at the moment. Now, in 2014, five countries, Burkina Faso, Niger, Chad, Mauritania, and Mali, joined forces with this G5, the Sahel G5, and they actually began an armed operation together, supported with money from the West, particularly France, in 2017. But now they've fallen out, and France seems to have fallen out with a lot of them. There was some anti-French sentiments expressed in Chad. And when Emmanuel Macron said, we're going to get out of Mali now because they've been taking in Russian mercenaries,
yeah,
and they don't seem to be, you know, they seem to have other interests now and other things. France obviously saved Mali, which was going to be taken over by the jihadis. They moved in and hoofed them out. But then Assimi Goïta, the coup leader in Mali, when France said, we're going to leave, said to Emmanuel Macron, okay, but don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out. Go now, you know. And so they are moving them out bit by bit. But the fact is Mali was about to take over chairmanship or the presidency of this group of five. That would have been had they met back in February, but they haven't met yet. Countries like, I mean, in fact, the United Nations is talking very strongly against Mali. France is talking strongly against them. Other countries that are supporting the anti-jihadi fight or them in the anti-jihadi fight because of them taking in these Russian mercenaries have spoken against them. The meeting hasn't happened, and Mali said, you know what? We don't even want to be members of this G5 anymore. So they've completely gone it alone. And I don't know who's going to look after their security now. Certainly, I wouldn't put my faith in the Russian mercenaries.
No, doesn't sound like the best idea. So, all right, perhaps there is a reason for us to be a little less depressed about our own continent for the moment, because I'm looking at the latest failed states index for 2021, where there are figures available. Obviously, they compare these things based on all kinds of things. There are various indices which they use to compare, but we're not home on Africa. We're in Africa to the worst country. The worst country in the failed states index for 2021 is actually Yemen. But Somalia still does come in second. So we can claim second place. Syria claims third. South Sudan fourth, as you correctly predicted. And then, of course, Democratic Republic of Congo and so on. And at the winning end of that, the states that they think are least likely to fall apart, Finland, Norway, and Iceland. No surprises there. But as you say, with NATO bubbling in the background, who knows?
Yeah. Well, you throw your hands up at this one. I think what is happening, you know, and then when we're talking about the refugees coming in, the fact is the refugees, the bulk of them, the greater bulk of them coming in to Europe are all from Syria and Yemen, not from Africa, many from Africa. But and so when when Europe closes its doors, we as Africans say it's closing its doors to us. We come across the Mediterranean towards you. The bulk of them, and I've seen them. I went to Turkey and saw them in Izmir. You know, so sad to see, Gareth, 12-year-old boys waiting to get onto a boat. And they go and all they do is go and buy a cheap life jacket. There are shops that sell nothing but that, cheap life jackets. And then they've got their 6 and 7-year-old brothers with them. Their parents are either there already or waiting back in Syria for them. The desperation is beyond the singing, I tell you.
Well, JJ, it's not always fun to hear this stuff, but it's necessary for us to know what's going on, and we're grateful to have you keeping an eye on the continent for us. There's lots to talk about, and we will have you back again soon to talk even more. Of course, it's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School and JJ Cornish. Have an excellent Tuesday. We'll catch up in a few days' time.
Looking forward to it. All the very best, guys.
Thanks, JJ. Cheers.
Cheers.
That failed state index is like when you go into a shop and they've got all the products lined up. And some of the products are more expensive and you probably want them because they taste better. And some of the products, you just know there's going to be like stuff at the bottom and it's not going to taste so good. Mm-hmm. And you might get
sick. Expired.
Yeah. So that's where it is. It's an interesting thing that they do, though. They compare all kinds of living standards. They look at various factors. They compare, for example, whether or not there's peace, what the economy is doing, what the standard of poverty and wealth are in those countries, healthcare, They compare a whole lot of these indices, and then they put this list together. I'm interested in where South Africa fits into this. Let me see if I can find us. Because
I don't even know if I want to know.
So, okay, so we're at number 89 out of, so 89 from the bottom, okay, and the best country would be 179. So we're not even in the top 100, which is a bit scary. But we're not the worst. I mean, we're around Mexico, Fiji, Saudi Arabia, Armenia. These are not great neighbors, but we, you know, we'll take what we can get. Obviously, they look at all these things. Namibia does better than us, which is not surprising. Jamaica does better than us. Cuba does better than us. And then as far as African...
And we're paying Cuba.
Absolutely. As far as African countries go, some good scores here from the Seychelles, Botswana, who are up in the top 100. But we're not. We're down at 89. So there we go. That's based on 2021 figures. Tis what tis.
It is what it is.
When we come back, we'll have a whole lot more for you and some stuff that is not so serious, because there is a lot of funny bullshit going on in the world, and we've got to look at that too. Plus, we'll be joined by Mike Sharman, who is no stranger to the show and has written a new book. The man is just on fire at the moment. His new book is called Brandalism. Here it is. I've been reading this. Brandalism. And he talks about marketing, about branding, and about how you've got to change the status quo and vandalize the status quo. So lots of cool stuff happening there. We'll speak to Mike in just a little while. Don't go anywhere. CliffCentral.com.